Excuse me. In just a moment, the funeral service will begin. But before it does, I'd like to ask, if you have a cell phone on you, if you wouldn't mind turning that off, it would be appreciated. For those of you at home, we just ask that you leave your microphones muted. Unmuting your microphone will not help you to hear the service, but rather ensure that we hear what's going on at your house, hear the service. So please keep your microphone muted. Thank you. To everyone for being here, Isabel's friends, family, all the people she worked with and inspired. The Hebrew word for a funeral is a levaya, which means to escort, and that's one of the main things that we're doing here today. We're going to escort Isabel, both her physical body, but also her spirit. But we're not alone in this. Not only all the people here physically present, but also God's presence. And there's a beautiful psalm, the 23rd psalm at Tehillah, that's shared actually by more than one religion. That's recited at funerals, and it's appropriate. Why? Because it talks about how King David, in his darkest moments when he felt alone, God was with him. And so too, even though Isabel has all of us, Isabel absolutely has God present here. So what I'm going to do is, there's a beautiful melody. I will sing the psalm and then recite the translation afterwards. If you know this melody, you are invited to join along.
Is more David Adonai Roi Lo Esar Mino Deshe Yar Vitseni Ar Memenu Chogena Emi Nafshi Eshovel Nafshi Eshovel Yanchei ומד לצדק למען שמו גם כי אלף נגץ על מוות לא יירא רע כי אתה עמדי שבתך Umishanteha, Ashiteha, Umishanteha, Ema Yenachamuni, Taroth, Lefanai Shulchan, Ataroth, Lefanai Shulchan, Ataroth, Lefanai Shulchan, Negetzorerai, Di shanta v'ashem en roshi, di shanta v'ashem en roshi, di shanta v'ashem en roshi, kosi revaya, ach tov, ach tov achesed, yirtefuni, כל ימי חיי ושבתי, משבתי בבית אדוני, ושבתי בבית השם לאורך ימים. Ananai nai 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 Ananai nai 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 ananai nai 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 ai nai 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 nai
Song of David. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. God causes me to lie down in lush pastures. God leads me beside tranquil waters. God restores my soul and guides me in righteous paths for God's name's sake. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your scepter and staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in full view of my adversaries. You have anointed my head with oil. My cup overflows. May only goodness and kindness pursue me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Amen. It's right now the Jewish month of Elul, which is leading up to the Jewish high holidays. It's a time of reflection, looking back on the year and taking stock of ourselves. How appropriate then that at this point in the Levaya, in the funeral, is when we give eulogies, hespedim. And the purpose of them is twofold. One is to allow ourselves the space. It's okay and appropriate for emotions eyes here for people to feel sad, for tears to flow. This is a safe space for that. But it's also a place to honor Isabel. And one important thing about Hespedim is everyone is a human. Everyone has made mistakes, but that's not what we care about now. Those mistakes disappear when a person passes away. Right now, it's only the good. So we're going to invite up a number of friends and family and people who are very dear to Isabel to say some words about her life, to praise her, to honor her in this space. First, I'm going to invite up one of her stepsons, Daniel Bader, to say a few words. You're involved. Thank you for everything you've taught me.
You taught me to take care of your spouse, to take care of your family, to take care of your friends, to take care of your community, to take care of people who are less than you. You've taught me to be a good friend. You have taught me to enjoy company when they are there. You've taught me to honor your faith and to never give up and to keep on working. You've taught me that we don't need to impress anyone anymore. You've taught me to be loyal. You've taught me that you need to do the work. You've taught me to be witty and charming when the time is right. And you've taught me to eat 5 vegetables at every meal. Okay. I knew Isabel in a number of different roles. I was sick at some. I was the guy in charge of philanthropy. I was her tech guy, and I was her colloquialism challenger, which I'll explain in a minute. As her stepson, Isabel always treated me as a son. There was never any question about that. She knew that there was a sensitive line with me between being a mom and a stepmom, but that never prevented her from treating me with absolute love. And for that, I'm always grateful. Isabel was a voracious philanthropist. It was in her soul, in her heart, giving to others who through philanthropy and other ways was always on her mind. In recent years, her generous giving was focused on so many things, on community arts, on Queen's University, on UWM, on immigrant students, on indigenous communities, both in Milwaukee and in Kingston, Ontario. At Bader College, at Hirschmansu Castle in England, Bader Hillel Academy and Bader Hillel High. She was so focused on preserving the records of her husband, my dad, and the legacy of my father. And she was also very focused on early childhood education, and so much more. In fact, I knew that she used to hide giving gifts to me because she would ask me if we would have given through the foundation. And I said, of course we've given it. And she had a little smirk on her face. And I know that she already gave more. You know, when we thought that we've given enough, she's like, well, I think they need a little more, she should give. And after a while, she thought that I was like, maybe not agreeing with her. She would just do it and not tell me about it. And I would find out later. She was very, very passionate about her philanthropy. And one of the things that she loved the most for spending time with young people, particularly with college students. She loved that opportunity. She had many opportunities to do that here in Milwaukee, also in Kingston, Ontario, and in England as well. And it was one of her greatest joyous moments of her time was when she had an opportunity to have conversations. Partly, I think, to instill in them an importance of taking their education seriously, but also to learn from them what it was like, because it is a different time, and she knew it was a different time. She herself had a pretty strong experience as an immigrant to another country, from Canada to England and then to the United States, so she knew that path of being an immigrant, but she also knew how important it was to learn and to continue learning. And she was also passionate about her involvement with the foundation with Bader Philanthropy, so she was always asking me questions. Every time I came, she has questions about lots of different organizations. Do they have enough money? Do they need more money? When's the last time they got the grant? When are they going to get the check? No, really, really committed to philanthropy and helping others. Another role that I played with her was I was the tech guy, right? It was great. And I was the guy that she trusted with her TV and her iPads. And she was pretty scared of technology. And it was kind of beyond her in a way. She was a very traditional woman. And at first wasn't so crazy about the idea of seeing people through an iPad. But she learned to make it work, and she was determined to use technology. In fact, she had two iPads, not one iPad, because in case one didn't work, she wanted to have the other. And even in her frail stage, if somebody would call her on an iPad, it would bring in her hearing aids, and she would go running to the iPad, which anyone who's there would freak out, because like somebody 94, 95 years old should not be running anywhere. But she wanted to see her friends. She wanted to see her family. She wanted to see her nephews. Wanted to see her nieces. She wanted to see her grandchildren. Everyone who I've met have said they have a special relationship with Isabel. And I believe it. I believe that everyone who's ever met her, anyone who ever got to know her, has a special relationship with her. She was like that. She would make herself available physically, technically, in most cases now, but more than anything else, emotionally. She was there for people. She really wanted to be close to people. She loved people, and she loved to connect with people. One of my favorite roles with Isabel was to challenge her on some of her colloquialisms. She, of course, grew up in a different time than me, and grew up in different countries than I grew up in. She always had these little strange colloquialisms. Some of you know some of them, like she'd say, "Saved by Coconut Tart." And I was trying to look up the movie reference for it this morning. I couldn't find it. There's some movie that was back a long time ago, before my time for sure, about a coconut tart saving somebody. She loved her colloquialisms. One of my favorite was when we visited an investment property, went into the bathroom, came out, said, "You couldn't swing a cat in there." Got the cat by the tail. But she had all these colloquialisms. And I would slow her down and make her explain it to me. And that was one of the ways that I would connect with her background, with her culture. More than anything, Isabel was a giver. That's who she was. She believed that the more you gave as a person, the more you have. And she believed if you lost your life in service, you lost your life in service to others, then the more you will gain. And she believed if you give abundantly, you will live abundantly. That's who she was. Isabel will be missed and not forgotten. Thank you.
We'd now like to invite up David Bader, who's going to say a few words.
Good afternoon, everybody. Our family art historian wrote a little paragraph, just so you know what life was like. This is David DeWitt, and he is the graduate from Queens, of course, and he's the senior curator at the Rembrandt House in Amsterdam. Said, "I hope you're having good flights from Milwaukee. You recall lots of fun moments with Isabel. But among those, one stands out for being funny in a different way. A wonderful conversationalist, Isabel could be refreshingly direct and, of course, sensible. I did not yet know her that well when I attended a talk that Alfred happened to give at Queen's Alumni Group in Guelph, Ontario, around 1995, presenting the first volume of the autobiography. We had a chance to chat afterwards, and Alfred pushed me on my plans to write my dissertation on Jan van Noort as an artist." Some know that, from the 17th century, one of his favorite artists. He then asked me about my favorite paintings by the artists, and I named two that had dropped from sight. So these are, he named two paintings for Jan van Noort that were missing in the world. Okay, Isabel shook her head and asked me how one could choose paintings that one had not seen and did not know where they were. I did my best to explain that the role of intrigue and the significance of the artist's work. Isabel was not to be convinced. I was not sensible, of course. I guess I would have been smarter to choose the Vayner Jan van Noort. Fortunately, both works turned up eventually. So over time, they found them. And the Vayners didn't buy either of them, though. Oh, that's work. So that's a typical day in the life of Isabel. I wrote up some of my own things, which are a little bit different. Isabel, she was funny and had a great wit. She was very bright and down to earth. She had great empathy for lots of people, and she was not hoity-toity. She could also be no nonsense and very focused and scary. She was very generous. She did small talk sometimes when she wasn't mad or upset about something. If you know, the Vayners were not big on small talk or talking at all. She was able to envision large ideas and projects. Yes, Alfred, give that medieval castle to Queens. The castle had 300 acres of gardens, and she loved garden. Hidden thing in there. She took care of the family. She was able to tell my father what was wrong and what was right. She's one of the only people that could do that. It's hard to tell Vayners what to do. Each of us seriously focused on what we are doing. Each of us is seriously focused on what we are doing. We each all march off saying, I'm going to do it my way, attitude. Everyone is off in their own direction. She was the glue that helped us coalesce on occasion as a family. And she would say, you know what, we're all Vayners. So, you know, I mean, I can see it in my kids, they're all up running. And I'm like, yeah. And, you know, I don't encourage them to do something because then they definitely won't do it. She was able to communicate with the children and the grandchildren. She was very optimistic about what the future generations could achieve. Keep going, Helena, keep going. That was the last thing she yelled at Helena. And she showed Isaiah, who was here today, where to put the silverware so the waitress would know when he was done eating. She told me to behave myself. That's important. She had large projects in interests of her own. She was an Anglophile and loved theater. She and I watched all the same English drama shows. I'm an English theater addict because of her. Our family feels like an English comedy sometimes. She looked at gajillions of paintings with my dad. She had her own geschmack, flowers and animal paintings versus his old men paintings. Often I was with them on those big, gigantic painting experiences. Some of her funny phrases were, what a lot of fun. The penny drops. I'll see you in a fortnight. And of course, Daniel says, saved by coconut tart. And if someplace kind of didn't do too well and went bankrupt or something, she'd say, they've gone fucked. So I'm going to finish with a funny Isabel story. You ready? Some years ago, we went to the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota to have Dad thoroughly looked over after his stroke. Isabel, Dad, Mark Foster, and me. It happened to be Mark's birthday. After a long day of medical appointments, Isabel sent me to Costco to get some few things because they are inexpensive. After I accomplished that, I was sent to a Greek restaurant to fetch dinner. When I returned, Dad was in his pajamas reading the New York Times. Isabel started heating something up for him on the electric stove. I started eating my dinner. I smelled smoke, but being a Vayner, I ignored it. Mark started yelling things that I can't repeat in public. I turned around and the stove was on fire, and Isabel had started the styrofoam containers with the payment because she put them on the electric stove. I turned around and saw the large fire on the stove. The hotel fire alarm went off. The room filled with smoke and soot from the fire. I grabbed the gallon of distilled water I bought at Costco. I took the cap off and I brought it over to put the fire out. Isabel grabbed my arm and yelled at me, "Don't use that water, we paid for it." A $3 jug of water or burn it down on one cup. Mark put the fire out with tap water. The hotel called and I told them we had everything under control. I opened the window. Daniel calls and asked how the day was. I wiped the soot off my phone and I told him I would call him back when the smoke dissipated a little more. Dad was still there reading the paper, oblivious that anything happened, and asked when dinner would be ready. Isabel told him it'll be soon. Greg and I looked at each other and wonder. We're living in a news comedy, actually. Well, I have to say, a lot of fun. I guess I have one more teeny story. I guess, you know, we get very serious, and then Isabel shows up. And Faye wanted to use her grandfather's Alice at her bat mitzvah. And I thought that was a great idea. Isabel says it's a problem. Why is it a problem? Because he's wearing his talis in his box. So they buried him in a talis. So I'm like, oh. I'm like, that's really? Like, yeah. So this actually would just kind of tell you things that, you know, are you funny? Are you telling me something serious? And they were both. So, you know, you kind of knew she was coming at you. Something kind of serious, but she always had a little bit of a twist in there to keep, you know. Thank you. All right, thank you very much.
David, thank you very much. I'd now like to call it Margaret Foster, Isabel's niece, to share a few words.
And just to put it together, Isabel saw fit that today is my birthday. And so here we are again. But no birthday talk. Okay? I'd forgotten about that story in the past. So I'm really pleased to be here with you to celebrate the life of our dear Aunt Isabel. Her grandniece Carly is here. She lives in Chicago, so if you come. While the others of her Canadian and United King family are not here in person, I know they are with me.
You also.
And hopefully the Zoom is working. The United Kingdom family are the family she lived with and was very close to during her 30 plus years teaching career. She maintained those ties and in fact FaceTimed with Stephen Thorpe just in the last 2 weeks. Shelley and Diana Katz became close friends and are part of her Queens and Bader College family. To her Canadian and Overton family, she was sister to Cliff, or auntie to six nieces and nephews, of which I am one. She lived overseas when we were growing up and came to visit every 3 years or so, and I particularly remember the baby dolls she brought to my sister and I. Me. Oh, she's paying attention to my daughter played with my, and I still have it in storage in case there was a granddaughter, but I don't think that's going to happen, but I still have it. Heather remembers Isabel sewing her an Empire waisted house coat one year. We were in Kirkland Lake where grandma and grandpa were, and Heather didn't have a house coat, so Isabel sewed her one, and it was Empire waisted. And so then she taught her how to dance the minuet, because the ladies in the days of the needed to know how to dance the minuet. As we know, Isabel helped to start a costume museum in Bexhill and would sew period costumes for the plays that Thalia, the drama school, put on. Costumes, sewing, and drama were long an interest. The boys recall her bringing board games for them and playing them together with Isabel. You know, she was able to find and do things with us as individuals that we would be interested in. Cliff recalls, her brother, being very impressed with her driving proficiency. How she could drive manual transmission cars in Britain, going the wrong way on the wrong side of the road, and then automatically, you know, driving automatic cars in North America on the right side of the road. She would, any time that Mom and I were there visiting, she would say, Margaret, take the car, go and do something. Gotta hope I was going to drive the car. Several of my cousins and I recall Isabel and Alfred visiting us and staying overnight at our homes. Alfred would give talks about chemistry or his paintings to local chemistry societies or art galleries, and we would always go out to dinner, and it was Chinese. Isabel was very proper, but warm and loving. She had a dry wit, was a good listener, and missed the Polly Wee Little. Family was very important to her. She always wanted to stay in touch. She was interested in our families and how we were getting on. What were our children doing? What were they studying? What were they working at? She, my mom, and grandmother wrote letters weekly for decades, and this was before cell phones or any technology. And with Dan's help, she did get proficient with technology, and that was a real blessing. When she found FaceTime, she didn't want to talk on a phone. She might have to call you up and say, get on your iPad, but then we would FaceTime because it was easier for her to see us and have that connection. And then once Zoom came along, thank you, COVID, you know, there are some good things. Zoom was even better because FaceTime can be spotty, and she hated it when we would freeze up. She had a strong interest in sorting out the Overton family history. That was her maiden name was Overton. And we counted ourselves very lucky that Stephen Porch, who was one of the family members of her Great Britain family, he had a passion for research in that area. And so he completed the Overton family tree back many, many generations and sent large copy prints to Isabel because she couldn't read the small writing. And I wish I had thought when I took it home on Saturday to look back. I can't remember how many generations, but it's way back. She and I were going over it just last week before I rolled it up. It was important to her that this information not be lost. So I took what we had already reviewed, that went home on Saturday, and then we were going to go over the rest of it when I came back next month. My sister Heather is also keenly interested in genealogy, so she has stepped up and said she will become the keeper of that. So Isabel knew that's where it was going. It would not be lost. She didn't want it lost. I had to take it. Finally, I'll close with a memory of her 90th birthday. Backtrack to the castle. She and Alfred would be taking the train down from London. I'd forgotten about that, David. The train down from London, and Alfred would be looking at the real estate pages, and he'd say, what do you think about this castle? And her comment was, that's an awful lot of rooms to clean. Very practical. But in the end of the day, they did do the castle. So her 90th birthday, and I can't remember whether we went to Queens because it was her birthday to celebrate it there, or whether we were there at Queens for some other thing, and it happened to be her birthday. Dan, Linda, Heather, Wayne, Sue, Isabel, Poppy, and I were at Queens, and there may have been other family, and I forget. Sorry. We decided, in honor of her, that we would sing and dance for her. We adapted You Are My Sunshine to words that were appropriate. We formed a dance line. You can only imagine. And no, I am not singing for you. Okay. But we had a really good time doing that, and she was so thrilled. So thrilled. Special birthday for a special woman. And now there's one more angel up there watching over.
Thank you so much. Now I'd like to ask Rabbi Mendelschmuck to share a few words. On behalf of my wife, Torquay, my parents,
Rabbi Yisrael and Dvorah Shmack and our entire family, all the students and the staff, the boards of Vader Hillel Academy, Vader Hillel High, which Beginnings, Lubavitcher, Wisconsin, I'd like this to first express our deepest heartfelt condolences, loved ones, family, caregivers who became family, close friends of Isabel, Sheva Nechama, Bas Avraham Avinu, Aleha Shalom, Vader. The psalmist, King David, writes, Kol Kvuda Bas Melech Pnima, Imishbitzais Zohav Lavusha. How sublime is the princess who remains hidden. Her simple garments outshine settings of gold. These words could have been written for Isabel. Many of us who met and knew Isabel, sometimes for many years, as someone who lived sometimes in the backdrop behind her incredible husband, Alfred, of blessed memory. Of course, we know Alfred was larger than life, a man of many interests, an accomplished genius in many arenas. And Isabel stood at his side, often in his shadow, and happy to let her public and colorful husband have the spotlight. A casual observer might have been forgiven for thinking her more simple compared to Alfred. She made no effort to outshine him or outperform him. And one who made no effort to look deeper may have even thought that somehow she was secondary to him. But as the psalmist enlightens us, nothing could be further from the truth. Was this princess hidden behind the scenes? You may say so, but she was hidden behind the scenes like a brain or the heart or the lungs. You don't see them, but they are the vitality of everything you do see. She didn't need attention because she was busy serving as a source of life. She supported Alfred, she energized him, and she, ever so gently, when she could, she guided him. It wasn't that she didn't have what to say, quite the contrary. Only she didn't always have a need to say it. When she did open her mouth, it was always intelligent, it was clear, it was to the point, incredibly tactful, and in place. It was often sharp, witty. And once you knew her pretty well, sometimes wickedly sharp, sometimes side-grabbingly downright hysterical, I would be lying if I were to say that in the 18 years or so that I spent countless hours sitting with Alfred and Isabel in their home, attending events together, traveling to Queens a couple of times together, I'd be lying if I say that I knew her then. At best, I got glimpses of her here and there and of her wonderful personality. Today, though, I'd like to share the Isabel I came to know so much better in the last number of years, as my wife and I continued our tradition of visiting weekly. And over time, we got to know this regal, down-to-earth, unassuming, special woman who came to become a very dear and close friend. Early one winter, nearly 100 years ago, God in heaven looked on earth and he turned to the angels and he said, "You know what's missing? Isabel." Back then, Isabel was a divine soul, utterly at peace, with not a care in the world. but in the first of a lifetimes of acts of duty. Down to earth she came, small town of Kirkland Lake, Ontario. A baby girl born to Herbert Stella Overton. She was the middle of child, family of three children. And this little girl would grow up to live an extraordinary life, a remarkable journey. Perhaps it should come as no surprise that a woman with such a keen sensitivity to the plight of others did not come from an easy childhood. Born in 1926, she was a child of the Great Depression. She grew up really in what we would call poverty. She remembered her father, a cabinet maker, who had emigrated from England, on his hands and knees, coaxing their garden for some food to feed the family. She grew up in a different time, one where she spoke about walking to school in the frigid, below what we call below zero, there it's, I don't even know what, temperatures, in the huge, deep snowbanks, only to hike home for lunch and then go back to school for the afternoon. Paradise on earth, it certainly was not. And though, when she spoke of that time, quite matter-of-factly, and without a trace of bitterness or self-pity, her parents, neither of whom were educated past high school, they strove for a better education for their children, and eventually sending two of them off to college, Isabel didn't disappoint. She earned the Ontario Scholar Award for scoring among the top 5% of students in high school in the province, and becoming one of the best students of Toronto, University of Toronto, Victoria College. She eventually would become fluent in Spanish and French and German, in addition to her clipped aristocratic native English, or Canadian, that is. In 1949, she went on to England, the land of her father, with plans to spend a year there in education and teaching. She ended up staying more than 30 years, during which she taught English history in an all-girls school there in Bexhill-on-Sea. There, as we heard, together with a group of friends, she opened a elocution and drama school called Thalia. And later she started a costume museum, something she later introduced, I believe, at Queen's. Isabel was a lady. Though well-versed in modern realities, yet when you got to know her, at least when I got to know her, you felt you were connecting with an iconic woman from a different age. She was a classic. She was serious, but not melodramatic, usually. She was righteous, but never self-righteous. She was aristocratic, never imperious. She was the furthest thing from showy, but she presented herself impeccably, always a model of understated elegance. Hers was literally a journey from rags to riches. And she could have indulged in life's excesses and extravagance. Yet she embodied grace and otherworldly restraint. She didn't understand the word disposable. Everything had value. Leftovers meant something to eat a little later, or the day after that, or after that. Creature comforts meant little to her. I once told her that our daughter went off to camp, and I was so proud. They went to a rustic camp where sat there in the bunkhouses, but they needed an outhouse. Thought she would really, be excited swimming in the lake. She was so disappointed. She said, "Call that camping? That's not camping." For Isabel, for her camp experience, it meant like living off the land, right? Scrounging for food, learning to survive in the wild, finding yourself one with nature. You know, the forest was the dining room, the river was the pool, the whole world was the bunkhouse. That was camping. Real hardcore Canadian. During our weekly visits with Isabel over the past several years, she shared with us many of her interests and passions. Music, theater, drama. She loved going to plays. She was an expert, as we heard, in period costumes. She acquired a great love of the old masters, gardening. And then a whole new element emerged. In addition to spending countless hours poring over the material from Bader Philanthropies, every chair, she was so into it. And in addition to maintaining Alfred's charitable giving, she grew her own giving. With this everlasting association with Queens, she began seeking out the welfare of the Indigenous peoples. She brought that back here to UWM, seeking to change culture. And though I knew it before, I discovered that the importance of the career in education from all those years ago had never left her. Her interest in it was impassioned and total. Virtually each and every week when we visited, she peppered Dvarki with questions upon questions about the school, about the teachers, about the students. During COVID, she was fascinated. How are we keeping school open? Couldn't give enough detail. How are you doing with the parents? She gave suggestions. And she shared the triumphs and commiserated over the challenges together with us. And that same passion she brought to our discussions about the schools that bore her name, Bader Hill Academy and Bader Hill High. She felt a duty to our students that's astonishing. And as much as I would tell her about them and about the growth, she demanded more. She needed to know how we were growing and where we were growing and where we're getting teachers from. There's a shortage of teachers out there. And her desire to make things better for the students was constant. If there's a single word that I could think of that sums up the quality of this quiet and powerful woman, it's duty. She believed in it, she breathed it, and most importantly, she lived it. From the day her soul came down dutifully to earth, and traded its tranquil existence in heaven for a sometimes arduous time on earth, she lived for duty. To me, the secret of her grace and her class and her regal bearing was the sense of duty. She felt a call to duty beyond herself, and she lived it. That calling was expressed in a life of incredible service to others, and even that done with dignity and unassumingly. She found it really difficult to comprehend some of the selfish, me-first elements of modern society. I'll be honest, she found it sometimes almost repulsive or unrelatable. And though she was an ardent human rights advocate, she cared, but she recoiled from the idea that one's rights were more pressing than one's responsibilities. For her, a selfish life on earth was a terrible reason to leave heaven. And a selfless life on earth was far more important than heaven. Often, when a book is made into a movie, people say, the book was better. But while that can be true about the movies, it's not true about life. Studying lofty ideas spelled out in the holiest books by some of the wisest of men, it pales in comparison to studying those ideals as they are embodied by a person. Reading is great. Seeing is better. seeing lofty ideals played out by a fellow human being. That movie is much better than the book. When I beheld Isabel, I saw so much of what I had studied coming to life on the biggest screen of all in real life. Especially this truth, that setting yourself aside for others is the greatest thing that one can do. Sure, I can indulge myself. How shallow is that? But if I can transcend myself and be of service to others, to God, I will have satisfied my very essence, my soul, my divine spark, me. Her sense of duty animated everything she did. She was incredibly devoted to her family. As Margaret mentioned, I think it was at least when she brought it to our attention about 6 months ago, she was immersed in this family tree. By the way, she showed us at least back to about the 1650, and it went beyond that. She had this project, and she kept in regular touch with Clifford, and before her passing, her sister, and she kept up with the children and the grandchildren. And she took such pleasure in sharing all of their exploits. She was interested and made it her business, although they didn't make it easy on her, to know where each of the Bader grandchildren were at that moment in the world. She was so happy when Margaret would come to visit. She looked forward to your visits. She was thrilled that you were able to be with her these last 2 weeks. And as you know, we spoke about, she wanted to make sure if the next visit between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur would be appropriate. That'd be a good time for a visit. She might be too busy with the holidays. Just recently, she shared with us the joy that Jesse only recently began to take a real interest in the family history. She did the same actually with our children. She asked for pictures of each of them, made sure that the names were written down so she could know them by name. The same I know for her beloved physician, Dr. Fox, and his children. For Deborah, her children, and she took an interest in her caregivers, and Deborah and Kathleen and Peggy and Maria. I forgot somebody, I'm sorry. Oh, thank you. It was more than a simple polite interest. She cared about each of them, and she shared their stories with all who were close. She's an incredibly loyal friend. She stayed in touch with people for years and years, holding on to them through thick and thin. Her friends from Lake Park Synagogue, she cared about deeply, and they cared for her. Just recently, an old friend of Alfred's and hers was struggling to make ends meet. It bothered Isabel to no end, and she spent hours and days pulling all kinds of strings and pulling in all kinds of people to figure out a way to help him become financially stable with his dignity intact. To people in Eastcastle, where she lived, some who had been left there neglected by family, lonely souls, she felt their loneliness, and she took them under her wing to care for them, to look in on them. And when she couldn't do it herself anymore, she made sure that those who helped care for her, that they went over there and cared for them too. When Alfred passed away, I witnessed a transformation. After Alfred's needs had lovingly been met, she turned to other duties. She didn't slow down. She actually accelerated everything. In Alfred's absence, she opened up the desire for more philanthropy and doing more. In the last couple of years, I felt like she was channeling Alfred. It used to be that when I came to Alfred, there was a stack of papers and there were articles and there were things that we had to discuss. With Isabel, it started to become the same. She would read the Parsha each week and she would have bookmarks and she needed to discuss the questions she had. She asked for help in deepening her comprehension and knowledge of Judaism. she decided, she took on a project that she's going to reread the whole Tanakh, the whole Bible from beginning to end, with questions and concerns. And there were times I got a call during the week. If you have a little time in the next 2 days, do you mind coming over? I have some questions. She was stirred by a renewed sense of what I would call spirituality, but like everything else, it was in her way. It was about action and deed. So what do we have to do? Before the holidays, we'd get a call. Please come over. What do I have to do this Rosh Hashanah? What are the customs? Can we go through the matzah and tell me exactly what needs to be said? Before Pesach, we did a model Seder together so she would know what to do when. When I visited this past Friday, just 2 days before her passing, she had out on the table our seasonal celebration magazine, full of information about the whirlwind of approaching holidays, the month of Elul, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, and she was very anxious and agitated. And as soon as I got there, she said, what do I have to do this month? The month of Elul, what do I have to do? And I reassured her, it's okay. You're doing everything right. The month of Elul is just a time to think. You do that all the time. You're good. You're good. I would say if all God-fearing people would treat faith and spirituality the way she did, with an ironclad, action-oriented attitude, we would be much better off. In the last days and weeks, though completely and totally with it, till her final moments, she knew her end was near. This past Friday was a hard day for Isabel. Shabbat was a bit easier. She asked to sit in her chair, and she asked for Deborah to sit with her far longer than usual. For Isabel, Shabbat was a special day and a day of rest, when the caregivers were also not allowed to do much in the house. And so she chose this Shabbat to do yet another kindness. A few hours after sitting, now already in the early hours of the morning, she told Deborah, tomorrow, Sunday, is going to be very busy. But stay a bit. I want to sing happy birthday to you. I know tomorrow's your birthday. She implied that there would be no time to do so tomorrow. So at 4 o'clock in the morning, on Sunday morning, in an incredible moment of clarity and kindness, before saying goodbye to Deborah, she sang happy birthday to her. At 7 a.m., she passed away. When I asked Deborah, she said Isabel's calendar was fully clear for that Sunday. Sunday was the first day of the Hebrew month of Elul. It marks 30 days before the holy day of Rosh Hashanah. On that day, in the month of Elul, the motto becomes Ani L'Dodi L'Dodi Li. The name of the month spells the initials of the Hebrew verse, I am to my beloved, and my beloved is to me. First, I am to my beloved. Duty first. It's an annual reminder that our responsibilities to God and to one another are paramount. What an incredible and appropriate day for Isabel to have as her own. On that day too, Jews throughout the world begin blowing the shofar every weekday, preparing for Rosh Hashanah. Sometime this weekend, God turned to the angels around him and said, you know what's missing in heaven? Isabel. Elisha ben Nechama bas Avram Avinu. I'm convinced that Isabel heard him say it. She knew Sunday would be a busy day. She felt that on that Sunday, as the rippling waves of a million shofar blasts call out to God, who'd ride them back to heaven, place, peace, and tranquility. But this time, she would go back as a partner with God, having made his world so much better and having brought his children so much happiness. Believe it or not, everything that's been said, we've only said a little. But now let's do much. Isabel's legacy can't just simply remain in our thoughts and our words. We can't leave here with our souls stirred and our behavior unchanged. There's so much to do. There's so much that needs to happen. Let's scribble a mental note on the walls of our minds. What do I need to do? Who can I help? Which mitzvah needs doing? Let's commit ourselves to life's sacred duties, our duties to others, our duties as husbands and as wives, mothers and fathers, sons and daughters, our duties to our community, to our youth, to our seniors, to the lost and neglected among us, and our duties to our Creator, the God who made us and sustains us, who brings us together and introduces us to one another and shows every one of us can be. A world inspired with the good deeds that are inspired by Isabel will bring a world of nachas, of pride and joy to her soul. And in our good deeds, she'll live on forever. May the soul of Elisheva Nechama Bas Avraham Avinu rest in peace, be bound up in the bond of everlasting life. Amen.
Dr. Patrick Dean, the principal of Queen's University.
Thank you very much. I can't help feeling that the proper way to follow the rabbi's very moving words would be to just remain in silence, especially the description of Isabel's last days. So I offer a few reflections on Isabel's extraordinary relationship with all of us at Queen's over many years, with great humility. This has been afternoon hearing about Isabel's many, many extraordinary qualities. I'm grateful to Dan for inviting me to say a few words, mindful as I am about humbling if it is to do so at this point. Dan said something which I think is absolutely true, and it came through in the rabbi's comments as well, that everybody who met or knew Isabel felt they had a special relationship with her. And I will say, speak on my own, that is absolutely true. So as a person who knew Isabel far less time than many people in this room, and whose interactions with her were always within a institutional context, the news for death struck me personally very hard. I realized that over the time we knew each other and through the experiences we had, I have formed that very special relationship that Isabel had a way of kindling with everybody. When I was thinking about what to say today, I wanted just to begin by saying that I can't imagine that any university has benefited from better friends than Queen's has been fortunate enough to benefit from in Alfred and Isabel. Over many decades, back to Alfred's first arrival on campus to this very day, that relationship has been extraordinary. And here I speak after 40 years in higher education. I've never seen anything as extraordinary as this friendship between first two individuals and the family and an institution. An institution is immeasurably better for that relationship, that friendship. At the start, Dan listed some of the areas in which Isabel and Alfred have contributed to Queen's continues. These are aspects of our institutional life and identity that separate us from other institutions that really make Queen's what it is. I say in particular, just thinking about Isabel's recent contributions to the university, that her advocacy for the arts has been really critically important at a time when in Canada, as I know, around the world, funding for the arts, support for the arts, despite the critical human importance of the arts, has been in short supply, and the arts have needed advocacy and a powerful voice. And everything Isabel has done has advanced the cause of the arts at our university and more broadly in higher education in our country. And that is an extraordinary contribution. The Isabel Center for the Performing Arts at Queen's is a unique facility which stands as a witness to that long-standing contribution to the arts. But Dan also mentioned Isabel's engagement with Indigenous issues in the Canadian context. This has been a critical contribution to our university and the very, very important work that's going on in our country as the nation struggles to reconcile itself with its Indigenous peoples and some of the appalling aspects of its history. And everything Isabel has done, the passion she brought to this issue, the support she brought to it, which we see now tangibly in curatorship, in Indigenous art, material culture, in many other ways, a remarkable contribution to the real mission of the university, which takes me to the rabbi's comments about service. Here I suppose I simply want to acknowledge and to express the gratitude of the university for this extraordinary friendship and everything it's brought. I think it needs to be said that the friendship has been inspiring to the university, made the university want to be better than it has been. It has encouraged us to think boldly about where we want to have an effect in the world. I think I'd like to end by just talking a bit about Isabel as an inspiration at the personal level. So I knew Alfred and Isabel when I was at Queen's between 2005 and 2010. And I was part of the discussions that gave rise to some of their remarkable contributions, including the Center for Performing Arts. But then I returned to Queen's in 2019 and rekindled my relationship with Isabel. And this is a very personal thing with huge institutional consequences. We used to speak regularly. I don't remember exactly what the frequency was, but every month or two. We would do, not a phone call, it would be a Zoom call. And there would always be the struggle with technology. In fact, it pains me to say, I think our last call was almost, Judith will remember this, a very difficult one. The technology kept letting us down. We'd sign off and we'd try again and we couldn't hear each other. It's breaking up. And it was it remains with me a very painful last memory of those calls, which have given me so much pleasure. And what I would say is that the conversations with Isabel, whether we were talking about my dogs or whether we were talking about the future of the castle in East Sussex, was always the same thing. It was witty and challenging. Someone said in one of the obituaries I was reading this morning, Isabel was always a teacher in the sense that you were always learning from your interactions with her. And I would say that that was true of my personal conversations with her, as well as the ones about big university issues and broader questions. She inspired me, she inspired us all. And she inspired us at a time when that notion of service, the service which universities have to pay for our society and for our culture, has never been more important. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to acknowledge Isabel in that way. I'll say to have known her and to have been able to talk with her about issues both lighthearted and serious over many years and to work with her for the good of the university, you know, in the highlights of my personal and professional life.
Very much, Dr. Dean. Thank you all for sharing those words. And one very important thing is, this does not need to be the last opportunity of sharing these stories about Isabel, about allowing her memory to continue to inspire us.
please bring her stories, keep her alive in that beautiful way. I'll ask the question, how do you make someone feel valued? You actually value them, you care about them. And I think one thing we've heard through all of these speakers is that Isabel genuinely cared about every single person, and she found a way to connect to them, whether through philanthropy or through English theater with her stepsons, or through classical music with my wife, or when she found out that I had an interest in art and art history, I went over to her apartment and she started giving me stacks of books on art history, many of them written or compiled by her husband, Alfred. But we found that connection. But one of our strongest connections was in the relationship of congregant and rabbi. When I started here, she was someone who would come to synagogue every single week. And afterwards, I would always check in with her. And when she would see my children, she would light up. She brought that love. And during COVID, when that kind of relationship, you know, we couldn't be in person, we started having weekly classes over Zoom. And she was there every single week on Zoom. And if she wasn't, she would call me and say, Rabbi, I can't be that there that week. But she would participate. She would read. She would ask pointed questions. And if she didn't like my answers, she would make me call her after class. And we'd continue to discuss it until, as some of the speakers said, until she was satisfied. Isabel tried to be there for every person. And it seems like she was able to do that quite beautifully. And I think the theme here is that the quality of a person is that they bring their full self to every relationship. Her kindness, her warmth, her humility, her modesty, her dedication, education that, as Rabbi Shmuckin said, started from a very, very young age. All of these qualities she brought to everything she did. And even though when she met Alfred, she fully gave herself and fully embraced herself to everything that he loved, gave herself over completely, she was a fully formed person before she met Alfred. She had so many interests, teaching for nearly 30 years, her love of theater, all of this she brought with her. And that's the legacy, along with what she supported and Alfred doing, that will continue long after after she has left this world. But what I want to do is share one small anecdote from one of my congregants, a beautiful story, because it talks about how she can bring her full self, her warmth, her humor, into even the smallest of interactions. It was the grand opening of Bader Philanthropies. And for anyone who was there, it was a big, beautiful party with music and everything. And this mother came over with her young daughter. And this young daughter was telling Isabel how this was the most wonderful, fun thing ever. And she had in her hand this big old plate of cake. And she had clearly been eating it. I don't know if there was a fork there because it was all over her hands. And Isabel went to shake her hand. And her mother said, oh, I'm so sorry. There's cake all over her hands. Did that matter to Isabel? No, what mattered was that little girl. So she took the girl's hand, covered in cake, and she held it for the longest time, said, you made my day. This is just as wonderful for me as it is for you. That's Isabel. Everything, the philanthropy, all of the incredible accomplishments. But that moment, she cared so much about that moment with that one little girl. And I felt that too. When I talked to her during the week, whenever she called me, I felt valued. That's Isabel. And as Rabbi Shmuckin said, what can she inspire us to do in action? Do that. You meet somebody, make them feel valued. Even if you'll see them for a split second, someone at the grocery store who's helping you bag your groceries, thank them by name. Treat every person as if for that one moment, they're the most important person in the world. Because that's what Isabel did. And all of us can do that as well. Again, as one of my congregants said beautifully, there were more people like Isabel and Alfred in the world, boy, would it be a different and better place. I would now like to invite everyone to please rise for the memorial prayer, which will be recited first in Hebrew, and then I'll read the English translation.
ממלאות קדושים וטהורים, אזור הרקיע מזהירים, את נשמת אלישבע נחמה, מד אברהם אבינו, שהלכה לעולמם בעבור שאנחנו מתפללים, את הזכרת נשמתה, בגן עדן דמנוחתה. לכן בעל הרחמים יסתיריה בסתר כנפיו לעולמים. בצרור, בצרור החיים את נשמתה. אדוני הוא נחלתך ותנוח לשלום על משכבה ונאמר Amen.
God, full of compassion, who dwells on high, grant proper rest on the sheltering wings of your presence in the lofty levels of the holy and pure, who shine as the brightness of the firmament unto the soul of Isabel Bader, Elisheva Nachama, Bat Abraham Avinu, who has gone to her world and for whose memory we pray. May her rest be in paradise, the Garden of Eden. May the Master of Compassion bring her under the cover of God's wings and bind her soul in the bond of life. May the Lord be her heritage, and may she rest on her resting place in peace. And let us respond, Amen. You may be seated. In a moment, the funeral director will come forward to call up the pallbearers and explain the next part of the service at the graveside. And as I said, this service ultimately is a leveillon escorting. So as the pallbearers are walking around, I will walk behind them, continue to recite prayers about God protecting us on our journey. And for those who will join us at the graveside, again, we are there to help guide her on this journey. And that is just that, a journey, to help her in the next stage of her journey in existence with God. So now I invite the funeral director, who will explain the next steps.
So the pallbearers, please come forward. And as they're coming forward, I'd just like to point out that the services will continue at Second Home Cemetery. For those of you who are not trying to get there, we do have directions if you're at the VBA. The directions also have the information for the Shiva tomorrow evening at Dan Bader's home, which is at 3550 North Lake Drive, 5 to 8 p.m. If you forget this information, you can find it on our funeral website at goodinvestment.com. So this time, or in just a moment, the casket is going to be taken from the chapel. As it is, I'd like to ask everyone to please rise. I'll proceed to second. At this time, this will conclude the services at the funeral home. On behalf of the family, I'd like to thank all of you for attending. And for those of you that are proceeding to Second Home Cemetery, we invite you.